And welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holley. In this episode, we will be discussing the 3-1 loss for Fulham against Bolton. We'll go through our opening thoughts on the match, our thoughts on the starting 11, and all the key moments. We'll also be rating the players, the Fulham manager, Bolton themselves, and yes, the ref. Before we discuss the match, I always have to welcome my co-host to the show. I'm going to bring him on right now. David, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. I'm fine. I'm lying down, actually. I need to be laid back to do this show, I think, because it was a big disappointment, obviously, what happened. So let's see if we can pick the bones of it and find out where we went wrong and everything and move forward.
Absolutely, David. I look forward to going through this with you. And honestly, I'm glad that I'm doing this with you because I have some bad news for me personally. I'm looking out the window, and it's snowing again. So I need you to cheer me up, and it's going to be difficult going through this match having you cheer me up based on what I watched. Our first half was great. You know, again, great is a very strong word. Good. Second half, not so good, and we will be going through that, my friend. And, you know, listen, again, thank you very much for joining me. We will also, just so you know, we will be doing another show tomorrow. Me, you, and Matt Smith from South Carolina will be making his return. Looking forward to doing that with you and Matt, David. That should be fun.
You know, it'd be good. I haven't spoke to Matt for a while. I'm not sure if he's upset with me. I was teasing him about the spicy chicken. I'm sure he's not really. It's fine.
I'm sure he's not.
And all the different, every time there's a Matt Smith mention on Twitter, I have to include him, whether we're talking about Doctor Who or the footballer, or there's another Matt Smith who's a Fulham fan as well. But no, it'd be good to speak to Matt. It'd be good to welcome him back. And yeah, I'm so jealous about this snow, except for one thing. I mean, you know, even at my old age, I played a few hours of tennis on Tuesday. I played a couple of hours of football last night, and I played a couple of hours of tennis this afternoon. It's awful, you know, and it's great to be able to do this in the winter to keep fit. I don't like indoor gym stuff like yourself. I find it monotonous for me. I need to be actually outdoors and running around. So if we did have your snow, obviously, I'd be snookered, as they say. It's lovely to look at, and it's lovely to see the pictures, but I guess I'm glad that it's over there and not over here.
You should be glad, David. But what's interesting, it's funny you talk about the snow, and then we'll move on from that. You know, again, a big event coming up here in a few months' time is the Boston Marathon. It's, you know, again, it's a huge event here, and runners from all over the world come over here. And what I can tell you is that I've noticed on the roads so many people running, you know, even with snow on the roads, you know, again, it's crazy. And I have a very good feeling that the majority of them are preparing for the Boston Marathon, which is still a couple months away. But again, the snow's nice to look at, but, you know, enough is enough. I've had enough. And we are, believe it or not, David, on Saturday night going into Sunday morning, we are expecting, they're calling a blizzard. Yes, another major snowstorm. So it just never ends here. It's crazy. But enough of talking about snow. I don't want to talk about snow anymore. I want to talk about Fulham. So let's start here. You know, again, I started with my just thoughts on the fact that this was, again, I don't know how many matches we've seen, David, a tale of two halves. You know, we say that all the time. I want to get your thoughts, and then I'll share some more of mine on this match. Just opening thoughts on what you watched on the replay. And, you know, again, this match is 2 days old, but, you know, again, both of us did get a chance to watch the replay. So share with me your thoughts on what you watched, David.
Well, this is a debut for me of sorts, because this is the first time I've ever done a show, I think, where I've watched only the replay. I've only ever done the shows where I actually was at the match live or previously watched the match live on a stream. So you watch it not knowing what's going to happen. Of course, I've watched it knowing what's going to happen. And I have to say, it's incredibly difficult. When you're at the game, it's so easy to rate the players because you see everything. Watching on the stream, it's so difficult because you only see what the camera shows you. But, you know, first half, I think, you know, it was, I mean, in the main, it was quite an open game anyway. But first half was a very open game. It's quite end-to-end, quite a lot of, sort of, you know, fast play through the middle, but from both sides. And we did look, I mean, I think we looked the better side, really, first half. My only negative observation in the first half, or observations, were the left wing-back seemed to be getting the better of Jack Grimmer too often for my liking. He was getting balls into the box. And whilst on the other side, Stafelidis, you know, he was okay. For the goal, obviously, that we were left wanting on that side because they were kind of he got beaten too easily and there was no one in the middle really. We were just it was too much space for Gudjonsson. You know, I think Bodiroff had gone forward. Tunnicliffe was nowhere. It just was too open for them. But you know, I did see some great play and I saw some you know some stuff which was very positive and there was a bit more luck or great final ball. We may have done a bit better. Again, my old observation for the first half and the whole match is that we give away far too many corners for my liking. And I think this is, you know, I've been looking at a lot of thought of this. And, this, you know, I like the diamond system, the theory of the diamond system being strong in the middle.
Right.
But our fullbacks are constantly left exposed. And as I just said there, Grimmer was getting a bit of a roasting at times from their left wing back. And their goal came from the right side. By playing this diamond system, their guys are always on our fullbacks. So they're always more likely to get crosses in or get corners and stuff like that. If they were
right.
doubled up perhaps more, we'd be keeping the guys further up the pitch. So that's kind of my observation is that we let the opposition get too far forward into positions where they can hurt us. And that seems to be the difference because other sides are getting more crosses and shots on against us and we're having to try and win games from less chances.
That's actually a very good observation, David. You know, again, very good analysis because, again, as I'm thinking about the way you're describing, you're talking about the crosses and the corners have been driving me nuts because the corners keep building up. Very good point by you. But the crosses in itself, you know, again, they just keep on building and building. And the difference between the crosses of the two sides, you know, again, we match to match is a great deal, and in this match, you know, again, we'll go through the stats, and when I show you the difference in the crosses, it's striking. You know, again, you could see, you know, again, the stats do tell you a story, and crosses definitely do in this match. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, David, and talk about the fullbacks. Talk about how easy Goodison had it, because again, you know, you go back to that goal. You know, again. Is it wrong to say he had free rein, David?
Well, no, it was far too open in the box. I mean, normally, although we, you know, we do concede a lot of these crosses and everything, we do, because of the nature of the way we play, tend to have a lot of people in the middle. We got a lot of blocks in and things like that normally.
Right.
But it just seemed very empty on that occasion. And you know, partly a virtue of it being an attacking match, we had just been pushing forward and then I think we'd given the ball away previously. And Stafelidis was a long way forward. He had got back a bit, but Bodiroff wasn't particularly far back. And I say, I don't know where Tynecliffe was. And there was just much too much space.
Okay.
Because it wasn't like a measured cross where I think, to me, it wasn't like you picked someone out of the far post. It was just hit in there, really, hit in the general direction. It just went straight through to him. And there was no one really to intercept it. Whereas, you know, partly by luck and by judgment and poor play, when we put balls into the box far too often, they just hit the first man or whatever. They get cleared. So, you know, and that's the frustrating thing about it for me, that we don't, when we do get into these wide positions, we don't use the ball well enough. Saying that, obviously, on this occasion, our goal did come from someone getting behind the defence and putting the ball back. In this case,
yes.
Kinnichich for Hutchinson, which was great. I mean, the first thing on the commentary they shouted was Jack Grimmer, and of course, I could just imagine Mike Gregg being like, you know, hysterical at home almost with joy. But it was just that gentleman Jim thought that Grimmer had put the cross in, but it was actually Kinnichich for Hutchinson. But
right.
You know, that's the difference. It's just, you know, I think watching that Bolton match from 2012 when I went there, we won 3-0. And we played a 4-4-1-1 that day. We played Clint Dempsey with Brian Ruiz just behind him. And then Diarra and Dembele as central midfielders with Duff on the right and Kakalicic on the left. And, you know, when you look at that kind of shape, that is almost the... that almost satisfies everything that we're doing. Trying to play the strength in the middle but the width. But the sacrifice for that, of course, is that you lose one of your strikers. You play one striker with a cam stroke second striker. But
right.
That day we were brilliant. We were fantastic. I'm sure you watched those clips as well. That was on the Fulham
yes.
website. And the trouble is we don't have maybe the calibre of people like Dembele and Diarra. all saying that, Parker and LVC are pretty good players. You know, it gave me thinking, now maybe should we be toying with something like that? Should we be looking at a 4-4-1-1? But then who plays the one and who plays the one? You know, do you play McCormack up front with Ruiz behind him even? But I don't see that working because McCormack isn't maybe the hold-up guy you want. So, you know, do you play Matt Smith there and, you know, and with McCormack behind him? Because you then have the width, hopefully, to get the crosses in. I don't know. But you know, I'm digressing slightly from the point. But
no,
it's just,
okay, David. It's okay.
It's kind of my overall preamble on the match is that the diamond is just, you know, it's not working for us. I mean, it's supposed to make us strong in the middle. And at times we look quite good, and Katalicic had a free roll and he was breaking away and made some nice runs. But we're just getting pummeled down the wings too much. And we're giving away so many corners because guys are getting into crossing positions. And it just, you know, and we're having to put the ball out for corners. If people, you know, are blocked up further up the pitch, they can't get crosses in. So the chances of giving away corners or getting shots and goals are much less. So something to think about anyway.
No, listen, it is, David. And, you know, going back to something that I said, you know, again, because, you know, Ida Goodinson, who was with Fulham for, you know, for a short period of time, you know, again, I shouldn't say that he had free, you know, ask you a question, free reign. He just had too much space, like you were talking about. It was all about spacing. It was all about, like you said, taking advantage of their strengths and I guess you could say our weaknesses, you know, and again, you have to give Bolton credit for that, but I still go back to the first half, lost opportunities, David. You know, again, few opportunities to make a 2-0. Maybe it's a different match at that point. Maybe if they don't give up that goal at the end of the first half, everything changes. You know, again, there are all these things that happen because watching the first half, Fulham were the better side, you know, and I thought by a decent amount. But it just shows, again, we keep going back to this, David, why can't they put two really good halves of football together? Why is it always one good half, and then if they don't do enough in that half, it comes back to bite them in the second half? And that's to me what was really the story here of Fulham's season. You know, I could say, David, that part of it is growing together as a unit. You know, it's a young team, it's a young manager. I'm talking about in terms of learning what works and what doesn't work, and they're making mistakes, you know, again, some bad passing. We've already talked about some of the spacing issues, but there's also some seriously bad passing, giving up the ball foolishly. You know, I know you saw that too. And, you know, and it's frustrating because it is really, you know, again, I go back to that message I got from James Doughton talking about, you know, on the College Talk Facebook page. It's like two steps forward, but then three steps back. It really is a little bit like that because – just when you think that they're making progress, you realize it's a young team and they're, you know, that they don't have it all together yet, you know, because again, we keep going stop start, and this is a perfect example of stop start. Second half, you know, again, I thought was poor, and you know, and they deserve, unfortunately, to lose this match, and I'm disappointed with the play in the second half. I really am, you know, because you know, I'm watching the first half, David, and thinking they should be up 2-0 or possibly even 3-0, you know, and it, you know, again, the goal changes everything. And again, with a young team, getting that goal in the 44th minute probably did something to their confidence. And then Bolton come out very strong in the second half. Got to give Neil Lennon a lot of credit for that. He got his team all fired up and they were able to really go forward for basically that entire second half. They were the better team in the second half by far, and that's, you know, and that's the unfortunate part of watching back, you know, because it's frustrating watching this, David. And I know that you were, you know, again, it's a different view for you who's very good at rating the players. You know, now you're rating it on a replay. It's a little bit different. So when you do rate the players, let's just take into consideration you're looking at it from a different view than you normally do. So I just want to say that when David does rate the players, he is looking at it a little bit differently. Which is fine, you know. It's just a different way to look at it. All right, David. Let's start here. Let's talk about the starting 11. I want to get your thoughts on the lineup that Kip put out. I believe you got it right.
Well, yeah, I'm gutted because obviously two games on the trot I've called the starting 11. Although it appears it was maybe slightly more luck than judgment because I predicted Grimm would come back, but apparently that was due to injury, not due to tactics. But nevertheless, I've got the 11 right. And for a very long time, it looked like my 1-1 prediction might be right as well. I was just waiting for that final whistle where I thought I was going to come on and give you some stick and say, look, I got got it all right. But unfortunately, it wasn't to be. I think in hindsight, I would have taken a point, although, as you say, after the first half, you know, it was, you know, we should have hoped for more, really. But, you know, the starting 11 was, I think most people would agree that the starting 11 was there or thereabouts where we where we'd want it to be, based on you know, what we've seen. But as I mentioned before, I think perhaps we need to start looking at the whole system because it's just leaving our fullbacks too exposed. So the only way to change it is to go to some sort of 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1, or even, you know, the situation of the my old favourite from the past, the 3-5-2 kind of scenario.
Right.
Because that way, the fullbacks at least are pushed on more. They play higher up the pitch. So hopefully you would contain the attack higher up the pitch. Saying that, obviously, behind, you know, if they get behind them, who knows what happens. But then you have the three defenders. You have the extra man in defence who can hopefully cover there. But that's by the by for there. I mean, you know, I wasn't unhappy with the starting lineup. We had people out there you could think could do a job. We had LBC and Fofana who can attack. We had Kakanicic in a free role. We have McCormack and Hugo who've got, you know, quite a good partnership together, really. And the usual suspects at the back as well. So I was totally happy with the lineup, really. I don't think, you know, so I know people have been saying, oh, give Burn a chance or do something different, let go to 4-4-2. But then I see people clamouring for 4-4-2 and having Patrick Roberts on the right. Now, that's not going to give you any natural width whatsoever because Roberts is always going to come inside on his left foot. So if you really want a 4-4-2, you need to be playing someone on the right who's got a right foot and who's going to go outside them. So either you go for George Williams or you even would play LVC there. All that you could argue is a waste, but if you played a 4-4-2, maybe you would have Parker and Fofana or Tiny Cliff in the middle. Sorry, I was nearly coughing there. But I wasn't unhappy with the lineup. I thought that the lineup was good enough to beat them all in all. But this is the bigger picture, isn't it? Are we that good? Are we as good as we think we are? And at halftime, what happens? Do you level that at Kit? That's why Kit's been getting stick, I think, because he's the one being, I suppose, blamed for the fact that he's not motivating the team or he's not making the changes or he's not, you know, he's been outfoxed, basically, by the other team. At halftime, Neil Lennon has done a job and his job has been better than Kit's because they've come out the better team for the second half. Okay, so the goal was certainly something to do with that, I think. It's always a downer to concede a goal like that.
Right.
But nevertheless, you know, if you're the better team in the first half and you can outplay them, why can't you do the same in the second half if you've got the superior ability? And that's what needs to be drummed into them, and that's what Kit needs to be doing. So good lineup as far as I'm concerned, but obviously it wasn't good enough.
No, it wasn't good enough. And, you know, again, I read some stuff from Kit after the match, and, you know, again, apparently he did what you wanted him to do, you know, motivated them for the second half. And, you know, sounds like he did, but for some reason they didn't respond, or you got to give credit to Bolton, David. You know, they actually responded better and really just took it to Fulham in the second half. And, you know, again, we'll go through that. We'll get there, and, you know, I get depressed thinking about that because, again, I'm watching this, and it's just like, oh, you know, like after the first half, just thinking about the – you know, again, it's not these – tremendous opportunities, but there are opportunities. There's opportunities to make it, you know, to make it comfortable for you. You know, again, this is a team. Remember, David, this is what, you know, what's easily forgotten. I believe we beat them 4-1 at Craven Cottage. Is that correct?
Did they score one? I can't remember myself now.
You know, it's funny. I thought it was 4-1. I could be wrong. But again, we beat them pretty soundly, and I know that they have a, you know, a few different players, but still, you know, you should have confidence. And, you know, and a new manager, you should still have confidence that you can match up with this team. And obviously in the first half, they were able to match up with them. That's what's frustrating. You know, again, the same players were out there, and they were basically outplayed in the second half. You know, a couple of substitutions by Fulham, and we'll go through that as well. But, you know, again, have to hand it to Bolton. They just outplayed it. They wanted it more. I hate to put it that way, but that's how it feels like. They wanted it more. They took it, you know, and that's the unfortunate thing. And, again, that's also, you know, part of it for me is growing pains with a young team. And I was telling you this off air, David, you know, asking you, did you know what the average age was of the starting 11? And I just went through it because I was curious myself. And the average age on the pitch for the starting 11 was 23 years old. That's fairly young. You know, again, the oldest player was Hugo at 29. Of course, Parker comes on later, you know, and he's 33. But it's a pretty young team. And, you know, I think they're showing that. I think they're also showing that they're not, you know, completely, you know, like one unit yet. Listen, we've seen it from other teams. I think Fulham have been more talented than some teams that they played. But, again, you could see that other teams have played longer together and are more in sync, and Fulham are still learning to be in sync. And I think that's what we're seeing. That's why we're seeing one good half and bad half. There are all these different factors, but I think part of it is youth. Part of it is inexperience, possibly with the manager and the team. And then, the fact that they just haven't played long enough together to be in sync. I think all these things are coming home to roost, you know, all at the same time. So, anyways, let's move on. And I'll just say quickly, I approved of your starting 11, so I was with you there. So I have no problem with the starting 11, none whatsoever. You called it, David, again. Unfortunately, we all wish the result was better. But let's go to the key moments of the match. And let's start here. You know, I don't know how many times you saw this. I tried to see it a few times. Let's start here because I did see some of this on social media. 13 minutes, around 13 minutes, there was a shout for a penalty for a handball on Nikolai Bodorov. David, did you get a good view of this? And would you, if you were the ref, call that a penalty?
The view wasn't very clear for me, to be honest with you, on that. I find these full replays don't come out very sharp anyway at the best of times. But I think this was better than some of them. But it was too hard to call. And the ref was pretty close. And I don't know if it was... There was another one as well when I think it hit him on the chest.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have given it from that, but then I couldn't see it clearly enough. So it's difficult to say.
Okay. All right. So we're starting with there, you know, again, because, you know, when we watch the replay, you can hear the Bolton supporters going crazy. A couple minutes later, I think Fulham actually had a decent chance here with Seiko Fofana. He was one-on-one with defender David Weider, and his shot went wide, and it was just not a good shot. Just talk about this opportunity. Was this just a youngster just having just a bad shot, David? Because this was actually a good position for him to be in.
I've watched him quite a bit, and he kind of, I don't know, he doesn't seem to maybe hit the ball as cleanly as he can. I mean, he seems to kind of hit the ball with slice and spin sometimes anyway, naturally. Some people kind of take a very straight run and hit through the ball, but he doesn't. He kind of all the tricks and things, and he has all these like tricks and moves and stuff when he does these little jinks in and out. And I don't see him as being one of these guys, he'll prove me wrong, I'm sure, hopefully, who will just hit right through the ball and hit it dead straight as an arrow. Remember, I mean, the example of that was like Ross McCormack at home to Huddersfield, wasn't it, when he hit that,
yep,
that brilliant shot. And I don't see him striking the ball cleanly like that. So I think there's always a chance with Fofana that the ball will kind of bend one way or the other, really, deliberately or otherwise. You know, he seems to definitely have this ability and this desire to run at players and try and take them all on. And they, one day maybe he'll actually get through and get a shot in or get a goal. But, no, I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't good enough on this occasion, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, again, he's such a young player. I just feel at some point he's going to get it. But, you know, again, it was a good opportunity. And unfortunately, like you said, David, the ball just went wide, went probably in a direction he didn't want to go. And that was an opportunity, you know, a decent opportunity lost, unfortunately. But here we go into the 21st minute. Here's the goal by Fulham. And again, this is a very good situation. Setting it up, they had a corner before the situation that led to the goal. So, again, they're putting on a little bit of pressure, but they do get the goal by Sean Hutchinson. Talk about this, David.
That's right. It kind of goes on from what I was saying before about other teams getting too many corners against us. We got two corners on the trot, and on the second one, it led to a goal. The first one was actually a good corner as well. You know, I think it was. I don't know if it's a deliberate new tactic because we failed to beat the first man or what, but we put someone on the near post, and it was flicked on at the near post. I think it almost went in the goal, or the goalkeeper had to claw it out from under the bar, and it eventually went out for a corner on the other side. And it was taken short, if I remember rightly, by Kakaniklić, and I think it was Tunnicliffe, actually. And the ball was fed back eventually, or that was the LVC maybe fed it through. The ball came back to Kakaniklić anyway, and he was on the byline. He pulled the ball back, and Hutchison was probably 6 yards or so out and just slammed it in. So,
yeah,
you know, a nice finish there. Took it well. Not the hardest strike in the world, but for a defender, pleasing to see that one go in.
Absolutely, David. You know, again, this is when you have sustained pressure. Like you said, two corners back-to-back, this is what Fulham need to be doing more of, you know. And I would put this to, you know, like you said, I think the first corner, obviously, what was a factor in, you know, in the goal. You know, again, this is about, you know, again, we've seen other teams do it to Fulham. It's about time they do it a little bit more to their opponent because they get it done to them, unfortunately. All right, let's talk a little Ross McCormack, because in the 32nd minute, he had a shot that just went wide. This is a great opportunity to double the lead, David. It was a good cross from Grimmer and a great dummy by Christensen. This is a wonderful opportunity, but unfortunately, he missed. Talk about this opportunity. Do you agree with me that this is another really good lost opportunity here?
I think in that situation, you'd always like to get the ball on target at least and test the goalkeeper as a minimum. The trouble is, I suppose, in this scenario, although it's great sort of play, as that striker there, you never know for sure whether that dummy's coming or not, and so you have very little time to react. See, if the ball's coming straight to you, you know, but, you know, with the late dummy by Christensen, it's good because it takes out the defenders. McCormack had to hit it first time with very little knowledge, and, you know, knowledge it was going to happen. So he's hit it quite well. It's not like he's hit it badly. He's just
a little bit off target.
I mean, yes, I think you would hope to get it on target, but I don't think you can criticise him too much for that because, as I say, he had very little time to react to it, and he got a reasonable strike on it. But it's a shame, nevertheless. It was quite a nice little bit of play.
Yeah, no, it was, David. You know, and again, I'm just going through this because I'm just trying to show people that Fulham actually did have some decent opportunities to score, and this is definitely one of them. And then, you know, and listen, you know, we're going to talk about Marcus Bettinelli a little bit later. You know, obviously giving up that third goal was horrible. But again, David, he actually did make a good save a few minutes after this Ross McCormack opportunity. You know, again, on Goodenson, like, you know, like we were talking about, he was dangerous in this game, and Marcus stood up, you know, like I said, just a couple minutes later. And then in the 36th minute, again, I'm just going through this step by step here, McCormack has another opportunity to score, David, and he was set up by Hugo. Talk about this.
Oh, you have to remind me of this one, because was that the one where the... No, I remember one where Hugo did a really good flick on. No, that was to Kakaniklić, wasn't it? Hugo did a flick on, and Kakaniklić was clear, but he just didn't quite get to the ball in time. He got beaten to the ball by the defender, because I was really impressed with that. I thought that was an excellent header by Hugo. I would have hoped maybe Kaka could have got there, because he's quite quick. Sorry, remind me of this one, Russ.
Yeah, this is just a good shot, David. This is just a quality shot by McCormack. If I'm remembering correctly, and you know, again, just a quality shot by Ross, and you know, again, just another opportunity for Fulham to score. Just a nice shot, nothing spectacular, you know. But again, I believe this was on target. So again, we're talking, you know, getting shots on target where his other opportunity was not on target. So this is, you know, again,
that's right. I watched the first half this morning, the second half this afternoon. So my brain cells have died a bit since then, unfortunately. When I'm at the match live, it seems to stick a lot better than watching it on the stream where you've got one eye on something else as well sometimes, you know?
Yeah. No, not a problem, David. Okay, so here we are. You know, again, we are winding down the first half. And it's funny because Gentleman Jim said this several times. He actually didn't believe that that in the first half that that Bolton were going to score. You know, he was making it sound like to him that Fulham were by far the better side, and I actually back him up on that. But here we go, David. 44th minute, Janko got the cross in. We're talking about crosses, right? That set up Goodison for the goal, and this made the match 1-1. There was not, you know, again, I don't think there's much that Marcus Bettinelli could have done about this. What are your thoughts about the goal given up so late in the first half?
Well, I guess if, first thing for gentlemen, Jim, if you go along saying they're not going to score this half, then you're just asking for trouble, really, aren't you, unfortunately, because that's, football comes and smacks you in the face like that. As I said before, it was they got a breakdown there, right? The guys beat staff leaders to it, got a cross in, much too empty in the middle. Good Johnson's had really too much time to pick his spot, and you know, I don't think you can fault Bettinelli. It was far enough out from the goal that he wasn't going to be collecting that cross. You know, it was not like it was right on the line. It was probably out by the penalty spot, something like that, wasn't it? And it was just too empty in there. That was what struck me, was where were all the defenders or where were the defensive midfielders? So,
yeah,
much too easy.
Way too easy. I agree with you, David, 100% on that. You know, again, we go to the half 1-1, and we are going to go through the stats, but I want to throw a stat at you, David, right now, because this stat is significant. Okay, this is significant stat for the half. This is one that I know is true. I'm not sure about the shots on target, but the total shots for Fulham in the first half, David, was 9. That's the total shots they had in the entire match, David. Okay, they had 9 at the half. They did not get another shot in the game, in the match. So I just thought I would let you know that, because people have been asking a little bit about the shots on target, and I'm just telling you the total shots. Total shots, Fulham had 9 at the half, and that's what they ended up with. They ended up with 9 total shots in the match. And if you go back, you look at the second half, try to think of an opportunity Fulham had, and I can't even remember a shot because there wasn't one. So, again, I think that's significant, and that tells you the dominance of Bolton in the second half. The Fulham did not even have an opportunity. I think they got in dangerous spaces, but defensively they kept you know, again, being held without a shot. You know, not in a good enough position to make a shot, or the ball taken away from them in several situations. They did get themselves, I remember, in some dangerous situations, but again, not good enough to even get a shot off. So that's just something to think about as we go to the second half, David. And let's transition over there. And again, have to give Bolton credit because they came out very strong. They controlled the play, David. In the 55th minute, Stafelidis cleared a ball off the line from a volley from Lafondra. This was play off of a corner kick. Talk about this. You know, again, this is this kept the match close. But this is really, you know, an indication of what was to come, David.
Yeah, it was a corner from the right hand side as we looked at it from Bolton's right. Again, you know, giving away lots of corners. This is the situations that happen. But, you know, Lafondra literally had a free shot, I think, if I remember rightly. And
yep,
he placed it well. He hit it well. It's going wide of Bettinelli, I think. It was going to be a goal. And Stafelidis there, yeah, he saved us. So he kept us in the game at that point. And, you know, it was good that he was there.
Absolutely. And listen, you know, just a couple minutes later, David, in the 58th minute, Bettinelli made 2 stops. You know, again, he made a stop on a Lafondra shot and a follow-up opportunity. And again, Fulham were really under pressure at this point. You know, again, that's why I wanted to mention the 55th minute, and then just a few minutes later, they were really putting on the pressure. And then, you know, again, I just want to talk about a couple substitutions because I want to ask you about this. Scotty Parker came in the 66th minute, David, for Seko Fofana. I want to ask you because, again, we're going to go through this. Do you think Parker came? Do you think this is the right time to bring him in, or would you have put him in earlier?
No, I wouldn't have brought him in earlier. No.
Okay.
The game was quite finely balanced, and I didn't think there was a need necessary to make a change in that respect. I mean,
okay.
Had I made a change, I don't know. I might have been tempted more even to take Tunnicliffe off and leave Fofana to see if he can like do what he does in this case. But no, I don't think it should have been sooner. Because
okay,
at that point,
okay,
as I say, I thought, you know, even though the game had turned a little bit, you know, we weren't in any immediate danger. Not like the Sunderland one at home where we were being overrun, it was different. But this one, I thought we were good for 1-1 still at that point.
Okay. Okay, so you didn't feel, David, watching this, that Scott Parker, you know, again, it sounds like to me you don't feel that full miss Scott Parker up to this point.
No, we do miss him, but I didn't think that we needed to make a change. You know, we've got some important games coming still. I didn't see the need to make a change particularly. I'm not sure if that was where, you know, a change was needed most. You know, you always argue if you're going to make a change, you're going to bring on someone more attacking perhaps. So, and of course,
right,
by taking off Fofana and bringing Parker on, you could argue we made ourselves less attacking. So, I didn't really see the need for change. I was glad to see him back, but I would have gone, say, with Panicky, if I was going to make the change, make it more like for like.
No, listen, I see where you're going on that, definitely. Very good point by you, David. That's actually, you know, again, it was more of a defensive replacement rather than an offensive replacement, where that's what Fofana does. So, again, very, very good point by you. You know, we went more defensive. And then, you know, a little bit later on, 76th minute, he brought on Colley Woodrow for Rodiega, and then later on, in the 81st minute, he brought on George for Kaká. But in between that, in the 80th minute, this is when unfortunately Bolton got the game winner, match winner. Sadie Janko, again, this is a really good shot. You know, talk about this, because I don't know if there was much that Fulham, I don't think there's anything that Bettinelli could have done on this. This is just a great shot. Wouldn't you agree, David?
You know, it was a bit out of nowhere, really, in a way, that he just suddenly whacked it and it's in. And he's obviously hit it really well, because you didn't see there being an imminent danger from that position. It's one of those things that this is what, you know, we need to do as a team. We need to try to shoot more often, because, you know,
right,
I was going to say we fanny around with it. I was thinking, that am I allowed to say fanny around? But of course, in America, fanny is something different than what it is in the UK, as you probably know. But fanny around isn't the worst thing we've ever said on Cottage Talk, and that's what we do, unfortunately. We do fanny around with it outside the box,
right,
and we look for that perfect pass or whatever, and sometimes we should just be shooting, and that's, you know, the guy's not fannied around with it. He's shot, he's hit it well, he's hit it clean and straight, like I was talking about before, and it's in the goal.
Yeah. You know, and that's what, and I think you described that perfectly, David, because, again, this is, I agree with you, this is what Fulham needed to be doing more of. This didn't really come out, you know, like, this, I guess you could say, came a little bit out of the blue. Like you said, it came to him, and he just shot it, you know, didn't think about it, just shot it, and it was just a great shot, great goal. You know, again, not this huge build-up, it was just a great goal. You know, sometimes you just have to shoot, and that's exactly what Janko did, and he puts them ahead, you know, in the 80th minute, 2-1. And, you know, again, at this point, I'm just hoping that Fulham could get the equalizer. And, you know, for their credit, David, they were going forward, but I keep going, you know, losing the ball and in very good situations often, and, you know, again, they just could not get another shot on target, or just a shot at all. And, you know, again, I have to give credit to Bolton for this, but still, you know, we need to be doing better. And it just wasn't good enough in the second half, and that's going to lead to the mistake. And again, after the mistake Bettinelli made a few matches before, this one was pretty bad too, David. And again, this just shows his lack of experience. You know, again, he's going to make mistakes. He's a young player, and this was a really bad one. 89th minute, a goal by Adam Lafondra, who took advantage of a bad pass by Bettinelli. Talk about this when you actually watched it back, David.
Well, you mean, the mistake against Sunderland for me was much more catastrophic, because at that point we were winning, and you could argue the game span around on that. On this one, you could probably argue the game was lost anyway. It was unlikely we were going to get anything from the game, so it was less of a problem for me, although it was still obviously a pretty poor mistake to make. And we'd had the ball, we had messed around with it a bit already, and we'd cleared it, and he's kicked it out front, and it's just gone straight to their guy, who's made a great header back. I think Bodaroff has left it to Bettinelli. Maybe he had a shout from him, I don't know. And Bettinelli's just you know, sliced it, scuffed it, whatever he's done. And it's gone straight to Lafonda because, of course, Bettinelli was well out of his box because we were chasing the game at that point. And it's just an easy, well, I'd say a fairly straightforward thing for Lafonda. Okay, he had to connect with it correctly, but he did that. He had an empty net to aim at. And it's just, a, you know, it's icing on the cake, really, for me, rather than a game-changing situation.
Yeah, very good point by you, David. You know, again, at this point, it was going to be difficult for them to get that equalizer at that point. So this just finalized the match. You know, again, 2-1, 3-1, you know. It is what it is, you know. And it's unfortunate that the kid gave up this goal. But, you know, I just, you know, at that point, I didn't see them getting the equalizer. And that's too bad, you know. But like you said, it's a little bit different than that other goal he gave up. But okay, David, and obviously the match ends 3-1, and Fulham go down on the road, and a very disappointing result. Like you had mentioned, you know, again, they had several injuries heading into this match, and this is a match, you know, you should be winning on the road. You know, it really is. You know, Bolton was a winnable match, and as we saw in the first half, David, when you have opportunities, you need to capitalize on them, and then you need to come out better in the second half. I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, where was the second half from Fulham? It was all Bolton. And again, I have no problem giving them credit because they took the game to Fulham, and they got all 3 points, and they deserve it. All right, David, let's look at the stats. I think the stats are extremely revealing in this match, okay? Let's start here with possession. 51% to 49%, fairly even there. Total shots, David, Bolton had 17, Fulham had 9, and like I mentioned before, they had all 9 in the first half. Shots on target, Bolton had 8, Fulham only had 3. Corners, David, we were talking about this. Bolton had 11 corners. David, the goal that Fulham scored on with those 2 corners, those are the only 2 corners of the match for Fulham. So think about that. That's how Fulham got that one goal. They only had 2 corners. What?
Isn't it? QED. Quod erat demonstrado, isn't it? QED, that has been proved, or that has been shown, basically. It proves my point, that's what I'm saying, yeah?
Yes, it does. It does, absolutely. Well, this one's going to prove your point, too, David, because you've been going into detail about the difference in crosses and how dangerous the crosses were. David, they had 49. Fulham had 12. Okay, that's a striking difference. Tackles, Bolton had 21, Fulham had 18. But when you look at the corners and you look at the crosses, forget about the possession. The possession's even. The possession's fairly even. So you're thinking, okay, Fulham definitely must have had their opportunities because they had the possession of the ball almost even to Bolton. But obviously Bolton took advantage of their opportunities and also were in more dangerous areas because, again, when you have that many crosses and that many shots, you're doing something with your possession. And Fulham, unfortunately, did not do enough with their possession when it's that even. All right. So, you know, David, you called this one. You know, like you said, sometimes the stats don't tell the entire story, but I think they were pretty revealing this time.
No, that's right. I mean, I think, you know, I'm already planning ahead for tomorrow, and I think we have a change of system coming now. We need to sod this diamond. Sod this diamond. Let's get rid of this bloody diamond, for God's sake. Let's get rid of
it. Okay. Well, that's good. We can definitely talk about that tomorrow. It's funny because
it's not working, is it? It's just really not working.
Well, you know, again, when something isn't working, see, this is what I'm used to, David. When something is, it's pretty obvious that things need to change. I expect manager, coach to make changes. You know, whether it's a system, whether it's players. I'm hoping that Kit makes changes. And I'm totally with you on changing the formation. It's not working. So maybe you need to change the formation. And it's funny because Mike has talked about that he believes that Kit ultimately, again, this is just his theory, wants to play a 4-4-1-1. Remember, he said that several times on the show, that that's what he's done with the under-21s. So that would be to your liking, I'm assuming, David.
Well, I mean, we have to temper this with the fact that, which was the game the other week now? We started playing 4-4-2, and it was rubbish.
I mean, yes, it was bad.
The diamond second half, it was much better. So, and then we.
I know.
And we stuck with the diamond for Forest, and we, like, after 30 minutes, we'd annihilated them with the diamond. So, I know Kit listens into this because it seems that he's following my lead now on lineup and formation. So, I was trying to joke with Will about this the other day. I'm not sure if Will shares my sense of humour or not, but perhaps Kit does listen into this. So perhaps we really need to get our heads together and think about this, so that in case Kit does listen and use what we say, we need to get it right for the sake of the team. Otherwise, I guess it's my fault then.
Well, David, I'll be looking forward to your formation tomorrow. I want to see what you come up with. You've already suggested different formations. I know which one that you want for him to try, so maybe you'll be suggesting that tomorrow. We'll see. I'm looking forward to doing the show with you tomorrow with Matt. And Matt's a coach, so, I want to talk to him in more detail about the formation. I want to get his thoughts on it. You know, again, I'm sure he has ideas himself. You know, when teams are going through bad patches, how do you change it? Do you change the formation? Do you change the players? What do you do? So I'm looking forward to having Matt Smith on tomorrow, David, and maybe Matt can shed some light on the situation on what he thinks. So it should be interesting tomorrow. All right, David, let's move on and let's go to part of the show everyone enjoys, rating the players. So let's start with rating the players, David. I'll start at the back. Let's start with Marcus Bettinelli, okay? You know, the one thing I want to say about Bettinelli, he did make some key saves, so I'm curious your overall rating for him. I know we have that terrible goal at the end, but what's your rating for Marcus Bettinelli?
There were a couple of smart saves. There was a couple of reasonable catches, sort of routine catches, but he came and claimed it. There was one flap or something where he didn't get there, and then of course there was the horror at the end. So I'm going to balance it all out, and I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 from what I saw. And I say this is based on what I saw. I don't think it was that catastrophic at the end. It wasn't enough to give him a negative mark because it didn't change the game for me, and there were a couple of smart saves. So I think 6 is fair for me.
Okay. And David, honestly, I tend to agree with you there. I was thinking myself that'd be the way I was going to go on that. All right, let's talk about the fullbacks. You know, again, you've already been talking a little bit about Stafelius and especially Grimmer. So I'm curious your grades, your ratings for them.
Grimmer, he was having a bit of a torrid time. Now, this is the trouble with these things, because I can go out there and say I'm giving him no marks because he was so terrible, and then I'll have Mike on my case all wild a minute, you know, because we're not playing with wide men, the fullbacks are up against it, and that's true. This is the thing. I've already said that myself, that our fullbacks have a hard time because of the way we play, the system we play. But I just think, for me, he was beaten a few times a little bit too easily. I don't think he was awful, but I'm kind of going to dock half a mark from my average and give him 5.5. Stafelidis, I thought he was a little bit better. I was disappointed they got the cross in from him for the goal.
Yes.
But otherwise, I thought he did okay. And obviously with that excellent save on the line, which kept us in the game at that point. So I'm going to give him 6, actually.
Okay. You know, and again, I think that's definitely fair for Kostas Stafelidis. And I do understand where you're going on Jack Grimmer. Okay. Now, I'll be curious your thoughts on Nikolai Bodaroff and Sean Hutchinson. Sean Hutchinson scored the goal. So I'm curious how much weight you're going to put on the goal on his rating.
Well, Hutchinson, it wasn't just about the goal. I think he's become quite dominant, really, for me. I'm not saying he's the accomplished, finished product, but, you know, he gets stuck in well. He's been winning the ball in the air quite well, and he's been winning the ball on the ground quite well. He does, you know, I wouldn't say he's the best passer I've ever seen, but he does distribute the ball quite well. He does try and play the ball. He doesn't just hoof it hopelessly anywhere. And then he's weighed in with a goal as well, and I think it's worth giving him credit for that. So I am going to give him 7 out of 10 because I was quite impressed with his overall play and his goal.
Oh, great. Now, how about Bodaroff?
I think he did okay, Bodaroff, but the trouble is, see, when you're at the game, you really see his worth when you're there live, how strong
right.
he is. You know, he doesn't give up an inch. He doesn't let people spin him, really. You know, he's strong in the tackle. He gets up well for someone who's not particularly tall. It's much harder to see that on the replay. So
okay.
I didn't really see his benefit as much. And there's also the question that I know maybe was slightly out of position on their goal, on their first goal. So I'm just giving him the bog standard six because I can't say for sure whether he was great or not.
Not a problem, David. You know, that's an honest rating for both players. And what's interesting, David, you know, again, we've talked a lot about Sean Hutchinson. He's only 24 years old. And I know you've been critical of Dan Byrne. Has Sean Hutchinson basically, you know, gotten hit? I mean, has he earned the position for you? You know, again, we've talked about possibly giving Dan Byrne some matches. But for you, are you now sold on this partnership of Hutchinson and Botteroff for the rest of the season?
Unless something happens, unless he decides to put Amir Bieta in there and when he's back and we see something different. I mean, for me, Hutchinson has been, now he's been said, he's been much more consistent than Byrne. Byrne has been a bit hot and cold. He's done some great stuff, but he's also been caught out for pace. He's been beaten too easily in the air. He's been out-muscled at times. And on the other hand, he's done some good things as well. For me, Hutchinson has been the more consistent performer, obviously, as has Botteroff, of course.
Right. Okay. Fair enough there. All right. All right, David, I'm curious your thoughts on Ryan Tunnicliffe and Seiko Fofana.
Tunnicliffe, again, it was a mixed bag for me. He's made a few bursts forward. He's been busy, but there's been some shocking passing as well out of defence. It's put us straight back under pressure. Certainly, I would be saying from what I've seen the last couple of games that Scott Parker is going to be starting on Saturday, maybe at the expense of Tunnicliffe. Depending on the system, obviously, we're going to see. This is the whole, you know, thing, but we'll go to that tomorrow night. So, for me, I don't think he did enough. He was okay, but he don't did enough. But, you know, I'm only going to give him 5 out of 10 because we need more composure there.
Okay. So, for you, you know, again, we've talked a good deal. I'm going to let you talk about Fofana. Calmness.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the calmness that Scotty Parker has.
No, I think Parker is calm. The thing is, when Parker came on for Fofana, so Tunnicliffe continued to sit, I think, and actually
right.
Parker played slightly in front of him. So it wasn't Scotty Parker's normal position when he came on either. Fofana, again, it's hard. He looks at times dangerous. Other times, you know, you want maybe a little bit more simplicity from him, I think. You know, he maybe does try a bit too much himself. You know, he's young. He's a bit rash at times. He's obviously got confidence in his ability, which is good. He's a confident young player. He's not frightened to try and take people on. But for me yesterday, it was, you know, he was in and out of the game a bit, so I'm going to give him 6 out of 10.
Okay. You know, and in case anyone's wondering, they probably already know, Seiko Fofana is only 19 years old, so he's a young player. And Tunnicliffe himself, you know, again, I know he's been around for a little bit. He's only 22 years old, which is, again, very young. All right, David, let's talk about LVC. I'm curious your thoughts on him. Do you still think he's dealing with the injury? I'm curious on that. And then also on Alex Kaczyniklic.
No, I don't think LVC's injured. It's several weeks ago now. He's been back. He hasn't been overplayed. I think he's back to his fitness, really. It's just, for whatever reason, the team aren't really quite clicking as much. Maybe people are getting wise to him a little bit. He's getting a bit more attention from defenders. Again, he was busy. He was involved with some of our, you know, quite a lot of our attacking play. But at times, there wasn't enough from him for me. We've been spoiled. We've seen man of the match performance from him almost week in, week out at one stage.
Yeah.
That wasn't for me yesterday. And again, I apologise to anyone who was there, but, you know, because I'm only seeing it from the replay. But I didn't see enough from him for my liking. I don't think he did anything particularly wrong, but I didn't see enough from him. So 6 out of 10 for him, for me.
Okay.
Kaczyniklic, you know, I thought, again, at times he looked really good. know, I do like him in that kind of cam role to a point, because he does burst forward quickly. He does offer some pace and stuff and movement that we were lacking when we had Ruiz in there, or even McCormack, really. But unfortunately, he's a little bit lightweight. He gets knocked off the ball a bit too much. He doesn't use his pace enough to get beyond the last man. He sometimes gets forced out a bit wide. Saying that, he did put a good ball in for the goal. So for me, I'm going to give him 6.5, because I think he did all his job reasonably well, and give him that half mark for the assist.
Okay, David, my one concern about Kaká, and I actually think that he's been a little bit stronger than say last year, but I hear what you're saying. He still gets knocked off the ball. I just think his passing's a little bit inconsistent. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean he's one of several of them. I mean, it's not just him, but yes, no, you're right. And this is why the question has to be raised: is he the right man for that role? I think
right.
you would expect Ruiz in that role to be a better passer of the ball, most certainly. Ruiz to use the ball better, but Ruiz does slow the game down, whereas Kaká will take it and run and try and beat people. Ruiz won't do that. He offers you something different to Ruiz, but. Again, it's like we're talking about with the striker situation. We have strikers who can do a bit of this and a bit of that, but we don't have that one complete striker, really. If you could combine Ruiz's kind of general sort of skill, technical skill and passing ability, or potential passing ability, and Kaká's pace and movement, then you would maybe have the right man for your cam role. But that's where we stand at the moment. This is going to be, again, this is going to be interesting for the lineup on Saturday as to what we do there, because I guess the question will be, do we put Ruiz back in the team? I'm not sure actually if he's fit enough to go back in, because obviously he hasn't really been training much. He's been doing gym work but not actually football work, so
sure.
Whether he's fit enough to play, I don't know. But again, we're back to that. You know, we thought we'd got behind all this for the season. We'd seen him off, but he's back again. like a fart in a space suit or something. It's been, never can get rid of him.
Okay.
You talk for a minute, because I'm going to have to dial back in.
Okay, not a problem. Not a problem, David. That's right. David has to dial back in, and while he waits, we will be talking about the strikers. And I'm glad that David has mentioned this, because, again, the striker situation is very interesting, because, you know, we don't have that one striker that can do it all. You know, like David was talking about, everyone, you know, they all have their own attributes. You know, again, I'm glad... Well, we could talk about this. Okay, David, you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. You know, it's funny. I was just, while you were dialing back in, I was just talking about the striker situation. Like you were saying, the strikers all have different qualities, but again, the finished article, you know, can they do it all? You know, it's funny, because I was watching back. Someone posted on a YouTube video, I haven't seen it in a while, of Bobby Zamora during the Europa League run. And when you watch Bobby Zamora hold up the ball and the way he could shoot, that was a special season for him. And Fulham don't have a player like Bobby Zamora, you know. And we just don't. We don't have that type of, you know, we don't have a target man. We don't have that guy. And, you know, I look back at this and I remember when he left to go to QPR, when he left. You know, I don't think I appreciated him enough, because he really was a quality player. I remember the time that he went down, David, when he got injured, and Fulham really struggled. That was a season with Mark Hughes when he got injured by Henry. I'll never forget that, against Wolves. And yeah. I was basically just waiting for him to come back. I just said, Fulham need to hold together until Zamora comes back in January. Then they can turn it around. And it just so happened, that's when things turned around, is when Zamora came back. So you can really see the impact of a striker at his peak. I want to say, at that point, I think Bobby Zamora was at his peak. You know, the year before, you know, obviously the Europa League run and all that stuff. But he was still at his peak at that point. And Fulham just don't have a striker that can do everything that Bobby Zamora could do. You know, and I just thought I'd bring that up, because we're talking about the complete player. For me, he was a complete striker. you because he could shoot from everywhere, David, free kicks, and he could hold up the ball, and he was dangerous. And I know his first year with Fulham, he really struggled. You know, I know that. I know he didn't score that many goals. But that next season, he was special. He was special. And he had a good couple seasons with Fulham. And I still think Fulham miss him. You know, we talk about Dembele and Dempsey. David, I think Fulham still miss Bobby Zamora. I can't believe I'm saying that. But would you agree with that?
Well, I was just going to, before actually, I was going to mention that when we were talking about it. You took the words out of my mouth, really. He was, you know, unfortunately, he had a bit of a grump on him, Zamora, and I think Martin Yeo upset him, and that was it. He just didn't seem to be the same player as he was previously. But no, you're right. That's the epitome of the striker. I know he wasn't everyone's cup of tea to start off with, but I think most people were warm to him, and you know, he won people over because he could do it all. You know, he actually was quite quick. You know, you could put him through, and he was quite pacey. He was
physical.
Yeah, he couldn't. You know, he was very, very strong. He used to out-muscle defenders all the time. He could use both feet. He had, you know, although he was left-footed, you know, the right-footed goal he scored against Shakhtar Donetsk more or less proved that, I think, completely.
Absolutely.
And he held the ball up so well, and he used to bring in the people who were running in. You know, as I say, he brought in others, and like Duff particularly was. I think Duff worked with him very, very well because he used to hold the ball up in that kind of inside right position and lay it off to Duff, and Duff would come in, cut inside and shoot and things like that. And the same, he worked well with everyone he played with, really. You know, people like Dempsey and of course, famously, Gira in the hole in that Europa League run.
It's
striker because... We don't have anyone who can do really any of those things. I mean, McCormack can't hold the ball up. Dembele can't really hold the ball up. Woodrow can hold the ball up, but some of his other play perhaps isn't as good. Hugo doesn't really hold the ball up. Hugo is more about, you know, running with the ball or, you know, getting into the area. But he's not really a hold up man. I mean, you know, I know Mike Gregg will be. Now, he'd be turning his grave if he was dead, but, you know, it does beg the question, let's bring Matt Smith back and see what he can do. Can he hold the ball up and bring others into the play? I don't know. Really got to play the right system. If you play Matt Smith, you would have to play with your wide men, I think. You'd have to play a 4-4-1-1.
No, you would, David. And, you know, and again, listen, we've been talking about Matt Smith, you know, this huge man, you know, bringing him in. I don't know, do you consider something like that? It's very interesting because talking about Zamora, and it's funny, one of the things that gets missed, because, again, we could talk about the hold-up play and bringing the other players in. You know, again, before we move on, I'm going to bring you back to a goal. I know you remember this. Against Birmingham City, remember this? At Craven Cottage? What a strike to win the match by Bobby Zamora. You know, again, McCormack can do that. McCormack can do that. But Zamora could do so much more, I think. I'm talking about his overall play. Like you said, he brings everyone in. McCormack, I think, is a good player, but obviously Zamora is a completely different player and a more physical player and could really just, you know, again, for me, do it all at his peak. Not the same player now, but at his peak. And Fulham had him for at his peak for a couple seasons, so... So that's going to lead me to talk about the strikers with you, David, you know, because I want to get your thoughts on McCormack and Rodriguez. And what's interesting, David, talking about both of them, I do think that they work fairly well together, and we saw some of that in this match. But I want you to give an overall rating for both of them.
Again, it's difficult, but, you know, Hugo, I don't think he was particularly awful, Hugo. He was... You know, some of his play was quite good. I mean, say that flick, I thought was really good, that he flicked on to Kakanic.
To McCormack.
To Kaka.
Kakanic.
Yeah, he flicked for Kaka, and Kaka didn't quite get there. But he does work well with McCormack, and, you know, at the moment, those two seem to be the best partnership in terms of the way they play together. They do seem to have an understanding. And the problem for Hugo is that... Well, a lot of it is unfortunate. He just doesn't get the opportunities. He's not perhaps the sort of player who's going to create his own opportunities. Not really, because he doesn't hold the ball up particularly. He's reliant on the service. He's reliant on the service from McCormack. He's reliant on the service from people like LBC, he's reliant on really fullbacks getting into the ball into crossing positions, which is a very rare occurrence, you know. It really is. So, unfortunately for Hugo, he doesn't get enough of the chances. So, do I mark him down because he didn't do that much? You know, it's the same as, you know, marking down maybe the fullbacks because they're under pressure all the time. And, I you know, I've been fairly strict with them, so I guess it's only fair to be fairly strict on Hugo because, you know, he doesn't have enough of the play for me. I mean, I thought he did okay, but more than that, I don't know. I think, to be kind, I would give him 6.5 just because of his overall efforts.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry, did you do McCormack?
No, I'm just doing that one now. McCormack,
okay.
I did see him fly to the floor at one bit, which upset me, and he was like appealing for something, which I don't know what it was.
I was going to mention that, David, very good point, but I was going to mention that. Go ahead.
I have to admit, that did peeve me a bit, and I was thinking I was going to take a mark off for that, because it started to niggle me a little bit, like it niggles Mike, I think. But... it's very limited to say what you see from the thing. It's just I can't believe how you guys manage to like do ratings from watching just these live streams and things. Okay. I think it's easier to watch a live stream than it is to watch the replay, because when you watch the live stream you have to watch it. When you watch a replay you can sort of watch a bit and then go off and do something, or you get one eye on something else and people talk to you and everything else. But the live stream is kind of almost as good as being there, but not quite. But watching live is so much easier. McCormack, apart from falling to the floor once and looking, you know, moany about it, there was that shot, obviously, we mentioned. There was a bit of link-up play. He tried hard, but, you know, good corner maybe that led to the second corner. But for me, no more than 6 out of 10, I'm afraid. We said on the previous show, yeah, let's... we need him to be exceptional or to have a great game to win this one. He didn't, and we didn't. So there it's kind of right was on the wall.
There you go, David. Bring back to the preview show. Very good by you. I like that. All right, on the subs, do we have enough time to really give a rate? You know, again, like you said, on the replay, too, it's difficult. No, I didn't think so either. Okay, so we're not gonna have you rate the three substitutes. It just isn't, you know, again, not enough time. So let's move on. Let's talk about Kidd. I'll be curious your ratings for Kidd on this.
Well, he's picked the right team, as far as I'm concerned. You know, if Parker wasn't completely back, then fine to keep him on the bench. We've got a very important game on Saturday. He's picked, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's picked a good side. We've set about the game well first half. We should have been ahead at half time. But this is the big question, isn't it? Do you blame Kit that he's failed to motivate the team second half, or he's been outthought by Neil Lennon? Out-tacticked? I don't know. Do you blame this on Kit? Do you blame it on the players? Do you blame it on their heads going down? Do you blame it on their inexperience? Or they've just got a lack of ability. They're not as good as we think they are. And that's difficult, so I'm going to have to go somewhere down the middle on that one. And as regards the subs, as I said, I thought the Parker sub was a little bit negative. I think it would have been less unsettling to do a light-for-light with Tunnicliffe and let Fofana carry on, unless, obviously, there was an issue with Fofana we don't know about. But I can't be too critical with that. The trouble is it gets a little bit tiring. All we do is just kind of we play Woodrow and we swap in for Hugo and vice versa. There's nothing that very dynamic there. Perhaps we need to be thinking out of the box and doing something really weird just to try and catch the opposition out. I don't know. You know, whether that's bring on Pat Roberts with a long time to go and play him in some kind of central position or just something different, something out of the box that, you know, is... Because I think it's, you know, it's... Cawley's, you know... an energetic guy, he tries his best, but I don't see him hurting teams. You know, do you see any of them really hurting teams? I don't see anyone really hurting teams at the moment, and this is the problem that you know, he might, you know, you give him enough chance, he'll snap a goal up. But we're not creating the chances, so you might as well not play with any strikers. You might as well do like Barcelona and have just all, you know, everyone in midfield and just run at them or something, you know, to be honest with you, the way it is. So for Kit,
okay,
I'm going to give Kit 6 out of 10 because I think he got,
okay,
he got quite a bit right, but the question marks are about how he motivated the team, how he failed to change it second half maybe, or how he failed to deal with the second half. And maybe the sub was a bit negative, but I'm not going to be too damning on him.
Okay. And I think that's a fair rating there, David. And listen, he's got his hands full in this next match. Again, we're talking about what's Kit going to do? You know, we'll talk about it more tomorrow. You know, what's he going to do with that starting 11? What's he going to do with Brian Ruiz, David? We're definitely going to be talking about that. You know, again, there's a lot that he has to think about for this next match against Ipswich Town. It'll be very interesting to see what Kit Simons does on Saturday. All right, let's talk about Bolton. I'm curious your thoughts on them. You know, again, like I mentioned, first time Fulham played them, I thought they were extremely poor. This time, better. You know, like I said, a few different players. But were they that much better than Fulham in the second half? Yes. First half, no.
They ran at us a bit. But there wasn't anything. I wasn't that excited by them, really. Again, you know, I'm watching the replay, so I have to bear it all in the same respect that I bear the Fulham game, that you don't always see what happens off the ball. But I didn't find them that exciting. I think, you know, we were the architects of our own downfall to a point again by not taking chances that we had, giving them, you know, goals too easily, giving up a goal at a bad time. I don't think really for me they're worth more than about 6 out of 10 because they,
okay,
I don't think they did that much. You know, the third goal was just a gift anyway. And they scored one really good goal. The first goal was far too easy. Second goal, take your hats off and yeah, good goal. But, no, sorry, excuse the cough. No, for me, it's 6 out of 10. They didn't really, you know, they didn't excite me that much. They did enough, but no more than that, really. They should have really, you know, we should have really given them a much sterner test.
Well, listen, I agree with you. I will give them props for the second half, David, because, again, they were the better side in the second half, and they did enough to win the match. Fulham didn't do enough to win the match, David. That's the bottom line. You know, again, the stats back that up. Bolton did enough to win. Fulham did not. And, you know, like you said, the first half, that's on us. You know, again, situations there, things could have been different. You know, like you said, the late goal and the missed opportunities. But still, overall, Bolton did enough. You know, they deserve to get all 3 points. That's the way I look at it. All right, David, I'm curious your thoughts on the ref. There were a couple of situations we talked about earlier with Botteroff. I believe they were both with Botteroff. I think the second time was off of Botteroff's body. But again, there were a couple of shouts for penalties from the Bolton supporters. So I'm curious your overall thoughts on how the ref handled the match.
I didn't see anything that alarmed me massively. There was one that was, it was quite a heavy challenge on Kaká. I think it was Dan's, I think, on him, actually.
Yes, very good point.
But I didn't see clearly enough to decide whether it was a foul or not, or whether it was just a heavy tackle. Because, you know, he may have missed one there. I think Gentleman Jim was saying the foot was up, perhaps, or something. But he didn't actually give a foul, ref. He stopped play because of him being hurt, I think, not because it was a foul. I mean, he stopped play for a clash of heads, which he should do as well. I didn't see anything that alarmed me with the ref, I have to say. We came through the match without a booking. There was only one booking on the other side completely. I'd like to say the ref had a good game, but again, it's hard to judge it completely from what you saw. So I'm going to say that he had a good game, but I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 because I can't be sure on some of the decisions. And, you know, and that might be the fact that he was kind to us with penalties because, you know, they may have been penalties, but I can't say for sure, so I'm just going to sit on the fence and say 6.
That's okay, David. I understand that, and I think that's fair. And I think the majority of your ratings, everything seemed pretty up to snuff there, my friend. You did a very good job on this episode. I don't think there's really, you know, again, when you lose 3-1, I know it's really 2-1, but I don't see any real full man of the match. So unless you feel that you want to give someone the man of the match, David.
I mean, by virtue of my ratings, the only one I gave a 7 to was Hutchinson, because of his goal, and because I saw some good committed defending from him. So if I had to give a man of the match, I think I'd give it to him by that.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, fantastic. All right, we will be talking about Ipswich Town tomorrow. You know, we'll be looking ahead to that match, and like I mentioned, we will have Matt Smith joining us. I'm looking forward to having Matt on the show. It's been a little bit, and you met him in person, so it should be good to talk for you to talk to Matt again. Looking forward to previewing the match. We also have a couple of really interesting questions that I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page that we'll be discussing. So if you have the opportunity and you want to chime in, please do go to the Cottage Talk Facebook page. The two questions are, first, which away ground has been your favorite as a Fulham supporter and why? So if you want to chime in, you want to share your thoughts, I might read them tomorrow during the show. So go to the Cottage Talk Facebook page. That's number one. Number two, again, people have accused us of being the Brian Ruiz show. Well, we might as well go back to that, David, because the second Facebook question is, should Fulham play Brian Ruiz regularly since his loan move fell through? And as you can imagine, David, we've already had a ton of people commenting on it, and I look forward to sharing them tomorrow. So if you want to comment on either one of those questions, please go to the Cars Talk Facebook page, and I just might read them during the show tomorrow. All right, David, let's wrap up the show. Excellent job by you, as always. And I look forward to doing this with you tomorrow.
Yeah, that's great. I look forward to that too. I saw your note saying we can do this in an hour. We've got no chance of doing this in an hour because I'm going to spend half an hour on my formation probably tomorrow. So I think we might need a bit longer, and especially if everyone can get their comments in about Brian Ruiz and stuff. And the other one, of course, about the other question is, you could have 92 at least different answers on that one, I guess. So
sure, yeah, and that's why I wanted to have one fun one, and one that's a little bit controversial. And the Brian Ruiz one is always going to be controversial, but the Fulham grounds, the away grounds question, I think is interesting, and I'm curious to read through them. I've already seen a few of them, so it should be interesting what Fulham supporters say about that. So please do go to the Cottage Talk Facebook page and feel free to leave comments. All right. All right, David, let's wrap up the show. Before we go, just want to mention that you can listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app. It's a great way to listen to Cottage Talk. That's how I listen back to the show. You know, you can get it at the app stores for your mobile device. Please do download the TuneIn app and then listen to Cottage Talk. There are 200 episodes that you can listen to. We go way back. I've been doing this show for now. This is my fourth season of doing shows about Fulham Football Club. So there's a good amount of episodes there. So it should be fun to go back and listen to any of those episodes. All right, David, I will be talking to you tomorrow. Have a good night, my friend.
Yeah, you too, Russ. Look forward to it tomorrow, and let's hope we have lots of interesting comments from everyone who's listening in that we can debate. And
all right.
Yeah,
I look forward to it,
David. I could come up with a formation for Kit to try on Saturday that will work.
Please do, David. Who knows? Maybe he's listening. Please do, come up with a formation. I don't care how crazy it is. If you think it's going to work, I want you to present it tomorrow. All right. Let's wrap up this show, David. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Take care, David.
See you guys.